Live and local, we are Acadiana's sports station. 103.7 The Game. KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Raging Cajun legend Brian Mitchell.
My dream was always to play in the NFL, so having that opportunity was the main thing I needed.
LSU College World Series hero Warren Morris.
I don't get tired of talking about it. You know, if people remember me for that home run and winning that championship, I think that's great.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
But just a better selection of pitches and a better job with discipline at the plate has really been what has led to this uptick in the performance from Saul Garza. Done a very different job here of late. Takes this one high and deep to left field. That will do it for home run number five. See ya. As I was saying, the discipline at the plate has been spectacular.
Go Tigers!
Good morning, Acadiana. Welcome to a Friday edition of RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on KXKW channel 32.1, as well as 133 and 1133 in HD on LUS Fiber. You can give us a call today on the Arco Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. Once again, that's 337-706-0111. Cody Schutz is man in the ones and twos, as always, and I am your host, Raymond Parch III. Let's get right to it. Remember like a week ago where the sky was falling and everyone wanted Paul Maneri to be fired as the head baseball coach?
I don't remember anything. I don't remember none of the such.
At LSU. Oh, they're not going to make a regional. Oh, my God. They're the terrible team. They don't have a winning record against in-state competition. Oh, my God. Pitching staff's a mess. The 10-year anniversary of the last College World Series team. Paul needs to be fired. Not living up to expectations. Yet here we are, Friday. Tigers have now won three in a row. Won the last game at Arkansas against a top five ranked team in the country. Took care of the midweek game. They're now 6-5 against midweek opponents. I'm sorry, 6-5 against in-state opponents, which, ironically, is the same record they had versus in-state opponents in 2017. Cody, what happened in 2017?
Well, they made it to the national championship, right?
Yes, that's right. That's right. They made it to Omaha and
actually fell
short. Eric Walker got injured along the way, and LSU fell short of a national championship. So, okay. Gotcha. And this team always trends well and does very well in the SEC tournament as well. Yes, Cody? Is that another fact?
That's like a Paul Maneri thing, yes.
Oh, okay. All right, well, here we are.
You sound like you want to say, but you know how ridiculous it is, but you really sound like you want to say, like, ha, all you marks, this team's been working us the whole time. How do you feel? Like, this team was just
getting a long con.
This team was just getting their kicks out of watching everybody freak out and worry and everything, and they're sitting back like, guys, we could have won every. We could have gone 56-0 this year. We just didn't want to.
Yeah. LSU needed to finish the season strong. They were on a five-game losing streak. The sky was falling. Pitching staff is a mess. Make no doubt about that. Arm soreness, the plague of 2019. Arm soreness in a theater near you. When your pitcher has a tender elbow, your season's on the line. It's because of arm soreness.
I want the guys from Smash Brothers, the voice guy from Smash Brothers, to read that. When your pitcher has tender elbows,
all hell will break loose.
Happy Friday.
Happy Friday. That is for sure Happy Friday. And we will get the voiceover guy to make something up now. That's the best thing you've brought to the table in a long time, Cody Schutz.
It's been a slow week.
LSU steps to the plate, beats Auburn 7-1 in the series opener for the final regular season series, not only at Alex Box Stadium, but for the regular season. And guess who looked good last night? The right-handed, former sensational pitcher that got injured on the way to the College World Series in 2017, had to miss all of 2018 due to surgeries and recovery and rehab. He was dominant. Like, he just wasn't good last night. He was dominant for the Tigers. LSU bats also belted three home runs to get the 7-1 win there Thursday night at Alex Box Stadium. LSU is now 32-21 overall and now 16-12 in conference play. We talked about it with Nick Suss from the Clarion Ledger when we asked him about Ole Miss and what they needed to do to get to a regional because they're in the same boat as LSU. And he says the magic number is about 18. There's only been one 18-win regular season team in conference play out of the SEC not to host a regional. That's one.
No, it was the, I thought it was the other way around. There's been one team to host a regional that didn't have 18
wins.
That's
what I'm saying.
If you get to 18 wins, you will
right.
Hope. LSU had 17 in one of these years, he said, right. But won the SEC tournament, I think is what he, and so they got a host spot. But other than that, 18 is the benchmark, guys, from what. That's what I was telling my dad yesterday. He got all excited. He's like, so we can sweep? And I was like, well, they need to sweep. I'm not going to say they can
I think sweep. I think the sweep helps them immensely, but I think if they just win, I said it 2 weeks ago, is if they can find a way to take two of three from Auburn and win two games in the SEC tournament, even if it's the single elimination round on Tuesday.
Right, just go beat Kentucky. I don't think they're going to make it.
Okay, they win two games in the SEC tournament. You're looking at a team that's going to be around 20 wins in conference play,
right?
In considered the best conference for college baseball, and it's LSU. They'll host a region.
Yeah.
Like it's, I understand that things have been messy for the season, and they have not lived up to expectations. Obviously, the expectations are through the roof at LSU, but now they have a three-game winning streak with last night's 7-1 win. Game two is tonight. That's 7 o'clock first pitch, 6:30 pregame. We're going to take care of you for that game as well. The good brother, Ben Love, host of Bumper to Bumper Sports, he's going to take you in from 4 to 6:30 there at Ruffino's on the river. He's out there once again going to be hanging out with Roger. So Ruffino's on the river, Ben Love, 4 to 6:30. That's going to lead you up to LSU pregame. And then at 7 o'clock will be first pitch for game two between the Battle of the Tigers. Walker improved to 5-4 on the year after firing six dominant innings. The sophomore righty allowed only one run in the second and settled in to limit Auburn to just two hits while walking three and striking out five. And then Todd Peterson, Mr. Energy himself, entered in relief of Walker and blanked Auburn across two innings. This is what you want to see. You want to see Eric Walker step up and become the ace that this team needs that's dealing with so much arm soreness, and you have Todd Peterson come out of the pen and be dominant. If you can get this from Walker and Peterson, you're going to be good. You're going to have a nice, good run in front of you. Let's head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Welcome on Chad. Chad, good morning to you, brother. How are you?
Doing good, man. I want to be your first caller at 6:15 this morning. I think I am your first caller. So,
I do believe, hey, man, Chad, you're my first caller this early ever. So,
yeah, man. Cody knows I'm the biggest LSU fan ever, man. But let's pump the brakes, bro. They've only won two games in a row. Usually, Monary turns this around probably about a month ago, and the last quarter, the last bit of the season. This is the last two games, man. I'm not convinced at all. They got to show me more than just two games in a row, beating UNO, which is a horrible team.
It's three, but Chad, it's three in a row. It's three in a row. Remember, they beat Arkansas.
Well,
that's right.
All right, I give you one more game. But, I mean, we've been waiting for this turnaround all season. From what they were supposed to be, we've been waiting this since after the sweep against Austin. They them put a big run together. They just haven't shown it yet. But, look, I am the hugest LSU fan out there. But I'm just not convinced yet at all right now, man.
Well, let me ask you this, Chad. I got you on the line. Let me ask you this. So what do you need to see? Let's say they sweep Auburn just in, say, that scenario, okay? And let's say then they'll have a five-game winning streak heading into the SEC tournament. What do you need to see? Mm-hmm. What do you need to see out of them in Hoover, which they typically play well at, in? What do you need to see from them in the SEC tournament to convince you that this team can turn it around?
Yeah, I just need to see them maybe win two games. But if they're going to put the streak, show that you want to be there and play.
All right. That's fair. And compete.
If you could beat 8-1, I mean, 7-2, it's the same thing. If they're going to lose, you know, have a close game, loss to a powerhouse SEC team, Arkansas, Mississippi State, something like that.
Vandy.
But just compete. Yeah, Vandy. Just compete. But if they lay down like they've pretty much done all year, to me it's the same old thing this year, man. But anyway, look, dude, enjoy your show like always. Have a good Friday, man. Thank you.
Thank you, Chad. Appreciate the phone call. Chad makes some valid points. It's a
level-headed LSU fan. I don't know how I feel right now. This is bothering me.
First of all, I need to get Chad's number so I can introduce him to some of my wife's family members. Just to be like, hey.
They need some of what Chad's got. Whatever
Chad's got on Friday morning.
Because he's right. I wasn't gonna. It's a good thing that Chad called, because I'd be lying if I said that thought didn't cross my mind. Now I am a glutton for positivity, if you will. I am. It takes a lot for me to say screw it. I will sit there and almost always watch a game, as long as the team is, you know, within single digit runs or something like that. I'm always trying to look positive. But hearing you say, like, you know, when you started the show off and you were like, remember how the sky was falling and now look at us. Yes, I want to agree, and I do agree to a certain extent, but I think to answer the question you gave to Chad about what I need to see,
okay,
I will be super, extremely, incredibly confident if we come out and see another similar 7-1 type victory again tonight. If LSU comes out again tonight and hits the ball like they did, where it doesn't seem to matter if it was
you one, want them to come out at Alex Box Stadium and flex their muscles.
Pretty
what
much.
You want them to do.
But if they can just do it one more time, then I'll start. Then I would. If we had a show on Saturday morning, I would be in here on Saturday morning probably singing to the high heavens about, oh, you better watch out if you're in the SEC now. LSU is coming for you, blah, blah, this and that. But I haven't quite got there yet, even though it wouldn't take much to push me over the edge at this point.
That's fair. I think there is a difference, though, that you're seeing in this team, and I'm going to bring it up. It's Todd Peterson. I think he provides the shot in the arm that this team has needed. And for whatever reason, because he struggled, Maneri and Dunn moved away from him, right? During the middle part of the season, they were up and down. They decided to go more with Devin Fontenot as the closer, have other guys be the setup guys, and you really didn't see Todd. Todd Peterson is the type of cat, he's an energy guy, and the team feeds off of him. I think it was a turning point for this team at Arkansas when Peterson comes in, and he was an absolute madman in Fayetteville for four innings. And I think the team feeds off of that, because we've talked about this on the show. They don't have really those vocal, in-your-face guys like they used to have, like Kramer Robertson, right? They don't have that guy. Todd's that guy. But how much are you going to listen to the relief pitcher who ain't pitching? You understand what I'm saying?
And he came in. I don't remember if the runner was already on third, but when he came in, there was a runner on already. He walked the first guy he faced. I remember there was like nobody out, runners on the corners, and they didn't score.
Right.
Now, granted, he put himself into a little more trouble, but he also got out of it. And if you're going to put yourself in trouble, get yourself out. So, you know, he looked good again last night, and if you noticed, almost the entire game, he's the first guy, Todd Peterson, out of the dugout.
Yep.
Slapping hands with whoever is to the dugout. I mean, I think maybe he listens to RP3 and company, maybe. And he picked up on the fact that this team, you know, whether it lacked leadership or not doesn't matter. It needed that face of the team. It needed that guy. And I think he decided, you know what? If nobody else has done it yet, then I'm a relief pitcher. Not exactly the ideal spot to be in to try to be the leader of the team.
Every baseball team needs that guy.
Yeah, but usually it's not your seventh or eighth inning pitcher.
Right. Like, usually it's an everyday starter.
How about
right?
that shortstop or that catcher there?
Yeah, you know? It's usually an infielder.
Tell you what, Saul Garza keeps hitting 460-foot home runs. Oh. He'll be a team captain. That was a moonshot.
But fair points by both you and Chad. Pump the brakes, yes. You can have a little trepidation but man, if they can build some momentum, they're always really good in Hoover. I agree with Chad. I need to see them win two games in Hoover, at least. You would hope they would make even a longer run, but it would be nice to have them to put together some runs. Because if this team can play up to its potential with the talent that it has in its lineup and the pitching staff, and if it's not plagued by arm soreness, they can beat anyone. The problem is they haven't done that. So they have to keep showing that they can do that and vanquishing the Plainsmen / War Eagles of Northern Alabama is a great way of doing that. Hell, you want to see them have a sweep this weekend. I think that's what the most ideal situation is. Take 2 of 3, sure. How about a sweep? They have to get back to work tonight to do that. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, Raging Cajuns baseball, they did have a 25-game winning streak versus the Warhawks of ULM. No more. We'll talk about it right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1 and 133 and 1133 in HD on LUS Fiber. Give us a call on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111, 337-706-0111. LSU baseball got themselves a much-needed win last night as they defeated the Auburn Tigers 7-1 in the opening game of that three-game series at Alex Box Stadium. Raging Cajuns, they'd be looking to build some momentum as well. They had taken the last two weekend series, taking 2 of 3 on the road at Coastal Carolina, and then sweeping Georgia State to put themselves in the top 10 in the Sun Belt standings, looking to earn a berth in the Sun Belt Conference Tournament. And they go on the road to face a team that they had defeated not once, not twice, not 5 times, not 10 times, but 25 straight times. 25 wins in a row. Rage on Cajuns over the artist formerly known as Indians, now Warhawks ULM. Or if we're just going to, you know, go old school, the battle between USL and Northeast Louisiana. I miss directional school names. But the Raging Cajuns baseball team drops the opening game in the series to ULM, who's fighting to get in to the Sun Belt Conference Tournament. Raging Cajuns had 3 different players go yard in Thursday night's ball game, but it wasn't enough as the Warhawks won 6-3. UL drops to 25-29 overall, 13-15 in conference play. The Raging Cajuns have hit at least 3 home runs in 6 games this year. They were 5-0 before last night. Hunter Kalsas, Handsome Monica, and Oren Vaon were responsible for the 3 solo shots. Vaon also extended his hitting streak to 18 games. Monica hit his 13th home run of the year. The 13 dingers were the most by Raging Cajun in a single season since Trosclair did it when he hit 16 back in 2015. But Austin Perrin did not have himself a good game. He dropped a 3-5 on the year for the Raging Cajuns, the sophomore did. He allowed 6 runs on 7 hits and only 4 1/3. He did finish the game with 5 strikeouts. Cajuns had some opportunities. They loaded up the bases in the opening frame with no outs, but were unable to plate a run there. That's huge. And their home runs were all of the solo variety. So, but Austin Perrin, you can't have your guy go out there and give up six runs on seven hits and only four and a third. Just, you can't. You put yourself in a huge hole, and the Cajuns were unable. You knew things. It had that feeling when they couldn't play to run after loading the bases with no outs in the first inning. You have an opportunity to step on the neck of your opponent, and you don't do it, and you don't come through, and you don't execute. Oof. And then your pitcher goes out there and gets teed up. Put yourself in a bad spot. They could never get runners on the base in bunches again. They hit three home runs, but it was for naught. UL, who, by the way, they did not punch a ticket to the Sun Belt Conference Tournament before this weekend series. They had firmly entrenched themselves in the top 10, but they have to win at least one game up in Fun Row to ensure that they get to the Sun Belt Conference Tournament. If they get swept by the Warhawks, which is highly unlikely, but if they do, they may not make the conference tournament, and ULM will take their spot instead. So a lot on the line, and you only got two games now. You just need to win one, Cajuns. That's all you got to do. You need to win just one of these two games tonight or tomorrow to punch that ticket to Conway, South Carolina for the Sun Belt Conference Tournament. We'll see if they can get it done. They'll return to action tonight, game two, and then they'll wrap up the series tomorrow. So, we'll see. But the 25-game winning streak for the Raging Cajuns versus the Warhawks has now come to an end. ULM stuns them last night at Warhawk Field. We'll see if the Raging Cajuns can bounce back the rest of this weekend and punch their ticket to Conway, South Kakalaka. When we come up here on RP3 and Company, it's time for us to travel around the state. It's been a while. Louisiana wrap-ups next, right here on 103.7 The Game.
Let's put the spotlight on the boot. It's time for the Louisiana wrap-up.
It's been a while since we've been in the car together, Raymond, but we are going to take a little trip sort of around the boot. It's more of a metaphorical.
Did you get the Powerade, the Mountain Dew, and the beef jerky?
I got just Mountain Dew. I didn't know. I wasn't aware.
Rusty. You got to have the road trip snacks, my man.
Keep it an extreme.
The little things of Pringles?
I do have the Wayne's World Twizzler dispenser installed in my car, though.
All right, let's go. I'm ready.
I think we can make it.
I'm ready.
We're going to be all right. So we're going to start. We're leaving Lafayette, and we're actually going to hop outside of the boot ever so slightly. But of course, it will always relate back to Louisiana. We're over in Fulton, Mississippi. Raymond, what do you got for us?
LSUE, the defending national champions on that level, had a setback last night in the Region 23 tournament there at Roy Shrestha Field. The game pitted the two ranked teams in the most recent NJCAA Division II polls. They lost 5-2 to a team I can't even pronounce the name of the college.
Oh, God. Good Lord.
Itawamba.
Okay.
Actually sounds right.
All right. I mean, I can't. Sure.
Good for me.
I'm not looking
Good
at
for
it.
Me.
I don't know.
Itawamba Community College, a 41-win team, defeated them 5-2. And LSUE's ace, Andrew Sheraton, who's 12-1 on the year before this, took the loss. He's now 12-2. And what happened was critical mistakes for LSUE in the 5-2 setback there
They'll now face Mississippi Gulf Coast Community College on Friday today at noon in the elimination bracket of the tournament. And what the community college did, Itawamba capitalized on a lone error of the game. A dropped fly ball to start the game put the Indians in scoring position, which also brought home the first run of the game. LSU would answer, but that kind of put them behind the eight ball.
Sometimes that's all it takes.
So, the defending national champions, a six-time national championship program, LSUE, one of the best junior college programs in the country, is now in the elimination bracket. They have to take on Mississippi Gulf Coast. So, hopefully, Jeff Willis and his team will be able to bounce back, flush that loss behind them, and get back on track to defend their national title by taking on Mississippi Gulf Coast Community College today at noon. But a minor setback, hopefully just a minor setback,
right,
for the Bengals of LSUE.
Yeah, a little behind the eight ball, but it's not all sunk yet. They still got a shot here. Just go out and play some ball.
That's correct, Amunda.
Let's keep rolling along here. We're going to come back inside the borders of the boot. And this time we're down in New Orleans, Raymond. Tell us what's going down in NOLA.
Well, at Barrow Stadium is the SWAC baseball tournament. And Southern, who is the top seed, and we had head coach Kerrick Jackson on the program a few weeks ago, they won the SWAC West Division, and they got the top overall seed. But it has been a daunting tournament for them so far. They escaped their first round game, pulled off the win, and last night they had to do the same thing. Last night they took on Texas Southern, who was game. They brought their A game despite being only an 18-win team. Pushed Southern to the brink, but Southern pulled out the 10-9 victory. It was a game marred by errors. Both teams committed 13 hits for Texas Southern, 19 for Southern. Lots of runs, 10-9 victory for the Jaguars. Connor Whalen named the relief pitcher of the year in the SWAC. He picked up the win. He's 5-0 now. And the only thing that matters is that Southern has now advanced. Grambling State, meanwhile, lost earlier yesterday to Alabama State 5-3. They come up just short, the Tigers there from North Louisiana. So today, Grambling's in the loser's bracket, having to face Prairie View A&M at 9 a.m. Well, that's some early baseball.
Yes, it is.
Woo, especially if you're down in New Orleans. Whoa.
You haven't played a 9 a.m. game since God knows when.
Never. And then Southern will play the winner of game number 10, which is Jackson State versus Texas Southern. That's another loser's bracket game. The winner of that game starts at noon, will go on and then have to play Southern tonight at 6 p.m. The top seed moves on. Ooh, they're getting closer and closer to winning that SWAC Conference Tournament Championship and punching their ticket for an NCAA regional. Maybe they'll stay closer to home. Maybe they won't even have to leave the city limits. We'll have to see. But congratulations to the Southern Jaguars for getting tested and once again pulling out a win there at the SWAC baseball tournament down in New Orleans.
Yeah, I think it might be a safe bet Southern wins that tournament down there, that they'll not have to go too far for their regional.
I don't know.
If LSU gets it, we're getting a little ahead of ourselves again. Sorry. Put the horse back in front of the cart. Now we're going to make one more stop on this edition of the Louisiana Wrap-Up. And it's possibly the farthest we've ever gone. I'm not sure. Maybe we left the country one time. I don't remember exactly. But this is pretty darn far from Louisiana, Raymond. But I know somehow, some way, you will link it back to the boot. We're all the way in Arizona. I don't know. Are we in, like, Phoenix? Are we in Flagstaff? Are we in, like, Tempe? Where are we at?
We're in Tempe. I like that. Patrick Peterson.
Oh, I know this one.
Oh, man. One of the best guys to ever suit up at LSU. He is the best player I ever saw in person covering LSU, Patrick Peterson. Great former Tiger. He's one of the best return men and best cornerbacks in the National Football League, multiple All-Pro, multiple Pro Bowler. He received a suspension yesterday of 6 games. 6 for a PED violation.
Yeah, the way they broke it down, it was 4 games for PED violation and then 2 extra games because he also tested positive for a masking agent. So that's where the extra two games comes from to make it six. I heard a cut from him. I'm going to look for it online. We can find it somewhere. I'll find it. But I heard sound from Patrick Peterson. He never outright said, you know, yeah, I took PEDs. But he just apologized and basically said, I really didn't want to get caught. This bums me out that my name is now attached to this. It sucks. Sorry.
I got the quote right here that you were referencing, Cody.
Atta boy, Raymond.
Definitely sorry for what broke out today. But for the most part, I think you guys understand my character and also understand my commitment on and off the field and also to my teammates and also to the Arizona Cardinals organization. Peterson said in a statement to local media at the Patrick Peterson Celebrity Golf Tournament. Awkward. Quote, that's why this is apparently very, very hard for me because I'm obviously never been in the situation before and never wanted to have my name attached to anything like this. But I'm looking to move forward and put this behind me. Peterson said via ABC 15 Arizona Shane Dale, I knew about it for months, about the failed test for months. I'm not happy but relieved that it's out. So, yeah.
That's one way to look at it, four
games,
I guess.
4 games for using a banned substance. And then 2 games for using the masking agent. Yeah, it's hard to believe that that's from some tainted meat, which is always the go-to Canelo. For like UFC fighters and football players. I went to Mexico. I went to Mexico, ate bad meat, and was
carne asada.
I mean, just say, bruh. Yeah, I did it.
What's up? It's what he said, but I don't think he wanted the soundbite out there of himself.
I know why he did it.
He was trying to say it, I think, without saying it. You know, read between the lines a little bit.
What makes this worse is that he's known as one of the most stand-up guys at LSU and in the NFL, and now...
This doesn't make him a bad person.
Doesn't make him a bad person, but it does change perceptions on how this goes.
I mean, he's pretty much out of the running for greatest cornerback of all time now.
And also, because of the suspension...
And he was in that. Don't act like he wasn't.
Because of suspension, he can't take part in the Pro Bowl. Even if we vote him in, he's not eligible.
Right. So there's another hit to your paycheck,
That's going to be another bonus that's going to be ripped away.
I mean, he's got plenty of money, but it's still, you know, I mean, he's not getting any younger.
So, disappointing news coming out of Glendale, Arizona.
Glendale! That's where we were. I'm on a flight from Phoenix to Flagstaff because my manager doesn't own a globe. Ron White.
That'll do it.
We're halfway there. One of the engines blows out. The guy next to me says, oh, man, how far do you think we're going to make it? I looked at him with full confidence, about to the site of the crash. It's pretty convenient, too, because it's where we're headed. Ron White, what a man. Remember when everybody thought he died for a while there? But then he was like, no, I'm very much still alive. But everyone thought he died. Google hoaxes.
I've seen him live.
Have you? All of Blue Collar or just
no? Just him.
That's still awesome.
Yeah.
Did he smoke and drink the whole time?
Oh, he smoked the whole time.
He's like the John Daly of.
But he did need a cart to get to stage.
He did. He needed the That's probably true though. I mean, probably doesn't walk much.
No. But he didn't need a cart.
The cigar's not actually lit though. That's the crazy thing. You just chew on it.
Yes.
I had an uncle that did that, just walking around big fat cigars and chewed on them the whole time.
But he's a former smoker, so he still wants to have the cigar, but he just doesn't smoke it.
To each their own. No judgment. No flex zone here.
No flex zone. Speaking of people that enjoy life, John Daly, he's at the PGA Championship. We'll talk about his performance yesterday and if that golf cart helped him at all when we come back here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network. You can also check us out on 133 and 1133 in HD on LUS Fiber. We talked about in the last segment that Ron White possibly needs a golf cart to get to the stage due to his hard living of years of just, you know, enjoying himself. And Ron White is a dead ringer for John Daly. He could have played him in the TV bio picture coming to Lifetime Network this fall, produced by Raymond Parch and Cody Schutz.
Trademark.
But John Daly, as you know, we talked about it earlier in the week, he received permission from the PGA Tour and the PGA Championship to use a cart because of arthritis, to use a cart on the golf course for the PGA Championship. And how did that help out long John Daly? Well, he had a +575 opening round. So he's tied for 114th currently right now as we speak. A tremendous day in the books. A lot of your top names are in the top 10. Jason Day at 1-under, along with Phil Mickelson, Jordan Spieth, Dustin Johnson. They're all at 1-under. So is Ricky Fowler. So you have this logjam of guys right there tied for top 10. You got Tommy Fleetwood. I picked him for the Masters. He let me down. He's trying to make me look bad now. He's 3-under. He shot a 67 3-under in the opening round of the PGA Championship, golf's second major of the year now. It's been rescheduled, went from fourth to second. Yeah, Danny Lee, the Australian, he was at 6-under, but his day did not start off well. He's already on the course today for round two, and he is +2 through three holes. And then there is Tiger Woods, who double bogeyed the first hole, scrambled, got himself a couple birdies, but then has suffered another bogey, gave some shots back. He is at +2, shot a 72, two over 72 yesterday in the first round. He's tied for 52nd right now, along with the likes of Francisco Molinari, who's +2, and perennial favorite Rory McIlroy, who when he's on, there's no one better. When he's off, he's like me. But the story of yesterday is that the Terminator himself went out there and flexed his muscle. Your defending PGA champion, the man who's won, has had more top 20 or more top 10 finishes and top 20 finishes in the majors since 2015 more than anyone else. He doesn't really care about the other minor tournaments. He just gets up for the majors, and that's Brooks Koepka. He shot a bogey-free 63 yesterday. Course record. Bethpage Black has a sign as you come on to the course, saying how difficult it is and that only skilled golfers should play this game. It's notorious for how difficult it is. And Brooks Koepka went out there and just curb stomped the course. A 7-under 63 in the opening round of a major. He won't tee off until later today because the first two rounds of any golf tournament, much less a major, is you swap your tee time. So if you tee off early in the morning on day one, then you'll tee off in the afternoon on day two. That's how they equal it out, make it more balanced for everyone. That way you playing in – everyone plays in the same conditions. So Brooks Koepka, who holds currently right now a three-stroke lead over Danny Lee, we'll be teeing off later today at 1:49 p.m. Tommy Fleetwood will be teeing off later today as well. Guys on the course right now are coming up. DJ will be on the course here shortly in roughly an hour. Phil Mickelson after him, Jordan Spieth, Jason Day, that group, all those guys teed off later yesterday. Sam Burns, who briefly was leading the tournament early on yesterday while we were on the air, the former LSU star, Louisiana native, Sam Burns, he's at even par. He shot an even par 70 yesterday in the first round. He's now tied for 20th. He'll tee off later today at 12:21. So we'll see if Sam Burns, the former Tiger star, can make a little bit of a run here and try to get something going as we begin round two of the PGA Championship. And Tiger Woods and Francisco Molinari will be paired together along with Troy Merritt in a grouping at 149. So Tiger's going to have some work to be done if he wants to win another major. He started off on the back nine yesterday, hole number 10, double bogey, the par four, and that kind of set the tone for the day for him. I've said it before, as great of a story as it was, and it was a tremendous story, Tiger winning the Masters and finally coming back, and his redemption story, getting back to winning another major. It's a great story. But his body is not going to allow him to be the dominant force that he was year in, year out, major to major. He didn't play a golf tournament since the Masters going into the PGA Championship to give his body rest. As dominant as he was and as great of a story as it was, especially with him coming from behind for the first time in his career to win a major there at Augusta, the man's had multiple neck, back, shoulder, knee surgeries. The body can only take so much. And golf is a grind. And when you're facing off against the likes of someone like Brooks Koepka, who is built like the damn Terminator, or what Tiger was 15 to 20 years ago, but just with more muscle, it's going to be difficult. It's going to be difficult for Tiger to dominate the way that he once did major to major. Now, does that mean that he can't win another major this year? Oh, no, absolutely he could. He could win the U.S. Open. He could win the Open Championship. But I'm not surprised that Tiger had an off round. He's going to have those. And golf has so much parity these days where you have so many good guys, so many talented, immensely talented, and more importantly, physically fit golfers like DJ, like Ricky Fowler, like Jordan Spieth, like Jason Day. It's going to be tough. There's not all these flubby-looking guys like me on the golf course trying to compete with Tiger Woods. That's not the world. That's not the golf world that we live in these days. All these guys are fit. They're built like swimmers. They're just playing golf. So we'll keep you updated with any going on there at Bethpage Black in upstate New York for the PGA Championship. Currently going on second round has begun. Brooks Koepka is your leader at 7-under after he shot a bogey-free 63 in round one yesterday. First hour is already in the books. Woo! Flying by here on RP3 and Company. Coming up after this break, Eric Narcisse, the Daily Advertiser. He's going to give us the full recap of all the goings-on that happened in Sulphur for the state baseball tournament. So tune in for that. Right here on 103.7 The Game.
Live and local on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parks III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Pro Football Hall of Famer Ricky Jackson.
I tell you what, man, I was out playing basketball, and a lot of guys came and told me thanks drafted to you, and they looking for you. I had forgot all about the draft.
UFC superstar Dustin the Diamond Poirier.
It means everything to me. You know, Lafayette, Louisiana, I was born and raised. I'm a Cajun. I love it. I can't wait to walk through the airport with that belt.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Welcome to the second hour of RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1 Stadium Sports Network, as well as 133 and 1133 in HD on LUS Fiber. We led off today's show talking about the LSU baseball program getting a much-needed win. They've now won three in a row. are seemingly trying to turn things around after that five-game losing skid. They easily take out the Auburn Tigers in game one of that series at Alex Box Stadium. They've now won three straight games. Eric Walker pitched very well. So did Todd Peterson for the Tigers. Raging Cajun's baseball team, meanwhile, though, dropped their opening game of their three-game set at ULM, a team they had defeated 25 straight times. Now they put themselves behind the eight ball because they still need to win at least one of these last two games against ULM to punch their ticket to the Sun Belt Conference Tournament in Conway, Arkansas. We also had our Louisiana wrap-up, as we touched on, LSUE baseball team dropping a game in the Region 23 tournament. They are now down in the elimination bracket. They'll face Mississippi Gulf Coast Community College later today, the defending JUCO national champions for Division II. Southern survived a scare from Texas Southern in the SWAG baseball tournament down in New Orleans. They advanced. They will play the winner of a loser elimination game later today. They'll play tonight at the SWAC baseball tournament. And we also touched on Patrick Peterson receiving the six-game suspension for PED use and a masking agent, the former LSU Tiger. But now, here in the second hour, it's time for us to head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline as we'll put a bow on the high school baseball season came to a conclusion for not only Acadiana, but for all the teams in the state. After a brief few-day delay due to weather, things got wrapped up earlier this week over in Sulphur. So we're going to head out now and talk to Eric Narcisse of the Daily Advertiser. He is the high school beat reporter for that publication. Eric, how are you this morning, brother?
Oh, man, I'm doing great. And yourself, man?
Doing well. Busy week for you, man. All the games got bumped back. You had to have some coverage there earlier in the week unexpectedly, and then you had the big awards banquet extravaganza on Thursday night. So been a kind of a busy week for you, brother. Are you resting today?
Oh no, man. You know, we still have all Acadiana to get out, but I actually had a little bit of a break, man. So I had some help to go cover games and stuff like that over the weekend, over the weekend and into the early part of the week. So as I was getting ready for sports awards.
I got you. Well, let's talk about how Acadiana performed over there. Some heartbreak across the board. STM falls short in the semifinals that were on Sunday. Opelousas Catholic lost the championship game, but, you know, had a terrific run getting there for the first time since the school was known not as Opelousas Catholic back in the late 60s. And Breaux Bridge broke through, got to the state championship round, but they fell short too. What are some of your takeaways on how the Acadiana teams performed in Sulphur for the state championships?
Well, you know, it was a battle. I mean, you know, OC, starting with Opelousas Catholic, you know, their game didn't go as well as they had hoped, obviously. I mean, none of the teams, it didn't go as well as they would have liked. But the OC game just, you know, kind of got away from them. You know, if I remember correctly, I think it was like 7-1 or 7-2, something like that. But they are, you know, I think out of all the teams, the one, you know, anytime a team loses, it's tough, man. You know, especially when you're kind of pulling for those teams. And, you know, once you get to the state, you know, I have that saying, like a lot of coaches, you know, you're there, you might as well win it, you know. But the Breaux Bridge loss, man, that was, you know, because especially when you know so many people, you know, guys like, you know, like Troy Thibodeau and things like that, you know, they're super fan. To be up 3-1, you know, in the seventh and to not be able to close the deal, man, that's a tough one. And, you know, it's they battled. You know, everybody battled, man. And you know, sometimes it goes your way and sometimes it doesn't. You know, there was a couple of surprises, you know, like you said, STM getting knocked off, Ascension Episcopal getting knocked off. So those are some things those are the two that probably stood out the most. And then, you know, Breaux Bridge, just, you know, knowing that Tioga team was really talented, and for them to have that lead and be that close to winning the school's first state title and then having it slip away, you know, that one was definitely tough.
We're on with Eric Narcisse of the Daily Advertiser here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. You know, Eric is someone who covered Tioga for many years in the Alexandria area. They always were that team that was ranked, you know, one or two or three in the brackets, and then always was eliminated and always got upset. And I remember one year they were upset by Bro Bridge in the first round. And, you know, they get their first state championship in 35-plus years. They finally break through and not have, you know, the disappointing losses and the stunning defeats and the knock on them of not being able to kind of push through. Let's spin it kind of positively, though, because we saw Tioga, what they did against Bro Bridge. They were able to kind of get over the hump themselves as a program from Central Louisiana. Can any of our teams here locally, whether it's Bro Bridge or Opelousas Catholic, having broke through to the state championship game this year, is this something that they can build upon moving forward and maybe break through with a state championship in the next few years based on how their teams are constructed?
You know how that goes. You never know. You think you know, and you really don't. But I mean, the quick answer is obviously yes, because I think they have programs. I think they've built all of our schools that were in the state semis or in the state finals. They all have a baseball program where they're in it. You know, year after year, they're contenders year after year. The team that's this was for Bro Bridge, though. This was a team that was built on a lot of senior, this was a group that had won a lot of games, these seniors together. You know, they were that good freshman class that came. So they're losing a ton. But Kyle Cormier does a great job over there, man. And, you know, I definitely think, even if it takes some time, but they were able, like you said, they were able to push through because they'd fallen short a couple of times. So, of even just getting to the state finals. So they took another step in the right direction. It's just now you have to hope that you have those younger kids that are, you know, in the pipeline that are ready to kind of, you know, carry the torch moving forward. I definitely think that, you know, with their formula of pitching and being able to play defense, that those are the things that are going to put them in a position to be able to secure a state title in the near future.
We're on with Eric Narcisse of the Daily Advertiser. He covers high school athletics here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Eric, STM kind of returned to form a little bit this year. I remember covering them for the back-to-back state championship years there in 14 and 15, where they had the likes of O'Neill Lockridge, Brennan Bro, Hogan Harris, Orion Veyon. They were stacked, and they just had those talented guys that all came up together at the same time, all played travel ball, and all came up and then all went on to college. Most of them are at UL. Some of them went to LSU. Was this kind of a bounce-back season for them, and can Gary Perkins' bunch kind of be back in the mix at the state championships once again next year?
Oh, without question. They're going to definitely be in the mix. I mean, they always are. You know, Gary Perkins and his staff, they do a great job with their baseball program, but they also have baseball players. You know, they probably have a couple athletes maybe that, you know, play a couple of different sports, but for the most part, these guys are baseball players. So they do a great job with their program. I definitely would be the last team I would count out, you know, or last program I would count out would be STM. I mean, it's kind of who's next, you know, and even if you lose something, you know, tremendous. I mean, look at football as well. I mean, you know, everyone's, you know, I haven't had the opportunity to see Caleb Holstein, but, you know, I'm like, man, hold up. We got a Walker Howard getting a football scholarship offer, and he's a freshman who, you know, I haven't seen play either, but I know he's playing behind Holstein. So, you know, they're just kind of a machine, man. It's just like, you know, you don't rebuild, you reload. And so, yeah, I definitely think ultimately you can't count out any of these programs, but definitely not programs that are well-established like STM.
Eric, let's talk a little bit about Turlings Catholic. You know, they were the Division II state champions a year ago in 2018 and did so in pretty convincing fashion. I mean, they survived a scare early in the playoffs last year against St. Charles, but then they took out Parkview Baptist in the semis, and then they absolutely crushed University Lab 10-3 in the state championship game. This year, they were upset in the quarters. I know that's a very proud program with a lot of tradition, a rival of STM's, and Turlings is one of the best in Acadiana, if not in the state. What's the makeup of that team moving forward? Are they a young team this year and they just got caught sleeping a little bit? Or are they a senior-laden team and they're going to have to reload for next year?
Well, they have a good mixture, but, you know, they're pretty senior-heavy. I mean, and you know, they're going to lose, you know, none bigger than, you know, Peyton Lejeune, who is their starting shortstop but also is a pitcher for them, who's going to UL. You know, we'll talk about suffering some, you know, kind of heartbreak. That loss to St. Charles, you know, they knew going in it was going to be a tough matchup for them, but after taking game one in that series, you know, if you're them, you have to be feeling pretty good. And then it just a couple of one-run losses, man. It was just right there. Game could go either way. And they just weren't able to close the deal. They have – this team was highlighted by a group of seniors, man, that were I'm sure all of them are special to Coach Thibodeau. But I think this group really meant a lot to him, just with their work ethic and the way they went about doing their business. And you know, but they're another one. You know, they're a machine, they're a program. You know, I mean, they've won prior going into, you know, three out of the last five state championships. You know, including three in a row until, you know, being knocked out in the quarterfinals this year. So, Mike does a great job with his program as well. So yeah, I think. Again, I hate to sound like a broken record, but when you have a baseball program that are so well established, like your STMs, and Turlings, and you know you're going to get the baseball players and the athletes, you know, year after year, or you already have them in the pipeline, they're just kind of waiting their turn. You know, you expect there to be just let's pick up where we left off and get across that finish line this time. More so than you expect them to endure that down year.
We're on with Eric Narcisse of the Daily Advertiser here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Eric, one final question real quickly. Is there a team that maybe kind of flew under the radar that you saw and you were like, wow, this is a talented team. They got a lot of pieces coming back that people may not be paying attention to because they did not have a deep postseason run this year but could next year, in your opinion?
I would say in 3-5A. I'm sure, you know, there's seniors obviously on these teams, but you know, I like what I saw from, you know, your Lafayette Highs, your Acadiana Highs, your Comos. I would say it's in 3-5A. The only, you know, the tough part of that is, you know, Acadiana had that, you know, they kind of had the long run or decent run before running into Barb in the playoffs, but I like 3-5A. I just, you know, it's arguably the toughest district in the state. You know, when you're going up against Barb and Sam Houston, but I think those three teams, I think, you know, they just have the ability. One, they're going to have a large assortment of kids. They're also, you know, dealing with baseball players. They're not really having to share so many athletes. So if I on the surface, I would have to just right now, I would say one of the three teams in 3-5A.
Eric, appreciate the insight as always, man. Enjoy your summer, and we'll talk to you soon, my friend.
All right, take care. Appreciate you.
Eric Narcisse, Daily Advertiser, joining us. Up next, my interview with Jerry Glasgow, UL softball coach, right here on 103.7 The Game.
Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. I'm your host, Raymond Parsh III, and I'm sitting here now with UL second-year head softball coach Jerry Glasgow. Coach Glasgow, welcome back to the program. How do you feeling this week?
Well, you know, there's a lot to do. You finish up school. You're, you know, kind of starting next year as far as handling a lot of things that year-end stuff. Meeting with your players, and you're getting ready for regionals. It's just an overwhelming week, the amount of things we have to do this week. But as far as the team goes, I think we have a really good shot, and we just got to keep playing our best ball.
You know, you talked about how you guys were kind of preparing for a while, despite getting to the 50-win plateau, being undefeated in Sun Belt play, both in regular season and in the conference tournament, and being ranked in the top 10 based on the RPI. You guys had to drop down to a 2 seed. Were you surprised at all that you were the 2 seed at the 11 overall seeds regional? Were you surprised by that?
Nothing really surprised you when you watch the committee for years. You know it could go so many different directions. And so nothing really surprises you as a coach. The draw that we got at Ole Miss with SEMO was actually one I expected. So nothing about it really surprised me.
What is the preparation like this week? Is anything different? Because last year, very much the team was still kind of getting to know you a little bit and vice versa, right? And you guys head into the NCAA regional. You come up just short, but you make a terrific run in that regional. Is the mindset any different for you and your staff with these girls and the team this year as, say, compared to last year?
No. Last year, you know, we were hoping we'd make a good run. We thought we could maybe compete for the final of the regional. If everything went right, we thought we could win it. This year, you know, I feel like if everything goes right, we can make a run and win the regional. I think we can make a run and win the super regional if everything goes our direction and if we play our best ball of the year. So we have a little bit higher expectations for this year's ball club.
On with Jerry Glasgow, UL, second year head man of the softball program. Coach, let's talk a little bit about Summer Ellison. She was tremendous for you all year. Sunbelt Conference Pitcher of the Year, well-deserving slam dunk there. Just talk a little bit about her development. She mentioned it, has mentioned that, you know, the off-season program with you and your staff has done wonders for her, helping her build up her stamina, helping her become more of a complete pitcher. Talk a little bit about her progression from year one underneath you to now year two.
I think she has a better mental understanding of the game. Mentally, she's a lot stronger than mound. Very resilient, very intelligent. She understands how to change speeds now. She understands how to go up and down. She understands why, you know, if you follow a rise ball with a drop ball or you follow a drop ball with a rise ball. Now she kind of understands why that works maybe a little bit better than she did a year ago. And then she just got more swagger, more confidence. She was hoping she was good at the beginning of last season. She thought she was good at the end of last season. And right now she knows she's good. And that's a huge advantage for a pitcher.
Coach Glasgow, tell me a little bit about, you know, obviously she's developed well, but this whole team hitting-wise, you guys are so much better hitters. Not only power, but just getting runners on base. You guys were so much more efficient this year than you were last year with scoring with the home run hitting and getting runners on base. So what's been the difference? Was that something that you and your staff did in the offseason with your program to kind of improve in all those areas?
Yeah, I just think we're a more mature offensive team. We draw walks more often. We're more patient to play. We have a better understanding of the strike zone. We have a better understanding when we need to be aggressive. So you'll see our on-base percentages up, our slugging percentages up, and our batting averages up. And then we're a better base running club. We're more aggressive. There's still games where we can be too aggressive and we make mistakes. But overall, we've been a far more aggressive ball club all year on the base pass with a lot less mistakes this year.
Talk a little bit about, you guys were tested a little bit there at the Sunbelt Tournament in San Marcos early on, gave up some runs. You had a rally a little bit, nothing too monumental, but how much of a benefit is that for you as a coach that your team was tested a little bit during the conference tournament heading into the NCAA regional?
Yeah, I think it's good. We've been playing some close games lately, and you know, the earlier middle part of the season, we had hardly any close games. That's not good. We need those close games because the regional, super regional, those kind of teams are always, those kind of games are always close games with other good teams. And so I think playing a 1-0 game was good. I think playing a 4-3 game in a conference tournament was good. And coming from behind was good. I think it set us up pretty nicely for the regional run.
Coach, this team seems to be playing with a whole lot of confidence, maybe a little bit of a chip on their shoulder, but not in a bad way. They seem the most confident they've been under your watch. How proud are you of seeing these girls kind of turn into women underneath you and your staff's leadership and now heading into this regional where they feel like they should come out with the win? They're not doing it in a disrespectful manner or cockiness. It's just simply we have a mindset that we're going to go on the road and we're going to win this NCAA regional because they haven't been to the Supers since they were freshmen, a lot of these girls. So how much pride do you take in you and your staff being able to have that mentality and see your team embrace that mentality right now?
Well, they're a really good bunch of kids. It's really fun to know that, you know, you've got a great, great group of people in your dugout, not just a great team, but a great, they're great people. as well as being great players. So it's really rewarding, and we take a lot of pride in that, and we're just extremely proud of the girls.
Coach, we'll wrap it up with this. We're talking to Jerry Glasgow. He's the second-year head man here with the UL softball program. His team begins play in the Oxford Regional this Friday afternoon. Coach, you have one of the best fan bases in all of college softball. Lamson Park is a great advantage. Those fans, they love coming out. They love supporting you guys. What's the reaction? What are you expecting to see in the stands? You're expecting to see a lot of vermilion and white. Are you hoping to see a lot of vermilion and white in the stands there in Oxford this weekend?
No, we're going to have a lot of fans there already. You know, I've been contacted by a lot of people going over. We'll be well represented, and we'll have a great fan base there as always. And I'm sure at the end of the day they'll exceed my expectations. But I've had enough phone calls. I know we've got a lot of people going over.
Well, Coach, appreciate you making some time for us here on the program as always. Best of luck to you and your team in Oxford this weekend, and we'll talk to you soon.
I thank you. Appreciate it.
That's UL head softball coach Jerry Glasgow making some time for us here on RP3 and Company. We have to go up to a break right now. We'll be back after this right here on 103.7 The Game.
Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1 as well as 133 and 1133 in HD on LUS Fiber. We've had two guests in a row. Guess what? We're going to make it three. That's right. The threefer. The very rare.
It's a turkey.
That's right. I've bowled a couple of those. We don't have time to get into a bowling discussion. I was actually in a bowling league as a youth. That tells you how cool I was. The ladies.
I'm the dude.
Yes. The ladies love when the guy in junior high and high school loves to go bowling. Nothing.
Dudas, Duder, you know, El Duderino, if you're not into the whole brevity thing.
Nothing makes the ladies more excited than a guy who has his own bowling ball with his name on it. Let me tell you.
Censored for radio, Raymond. Let's go bowling.
So, yes, the threefer. Terrific interview with Eric Narcisse of the Daily Advertiser to lead off this hour, wrapping up the high school baseball season. And then we had an interview I conducted the other day with Jerry Glasgow, UL second-year head coach of the softball program. They're already in Oxford for the Oxford Regional. They'll start play later this afternoon, looking to punch their ticket on to a Super Regional. But right now we're going to head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline and welcome on our typical Friday guest. It's going to be hard-pressed to find another man more excited about covering the New Orleans Saints than our boy Barry Hurstis of the Saints News Network and Big Easy Magazine. Barry, how are you doing this morning, brother?
Good morning to you, RP3. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing well. So I know rookie minicamp is just that. It's guys in shells. It's not really, you know, a very evolved game plan. You have a lot of bodies just out there, just to be out there to be able to execute some drills. I get all that. But you were there down in Metairie at the training complex. You get to see it firsthand. You did some reporting on it. What were some of your takeaways from Saints rookie mini camp last weekend?
That even though they only got five players in the draft, they're good. As we mentioned last week, I thought that all five draft picks have a legitimate shot at making the final roster. But none more so, obviously, than the first two guys, Eric McCoy. You know, he's going to be a plug-and-play guy. I would personally be very surprised if he doesn't start week one. I just think he's that good. He's that mature. He's already that far developed in his game. And then what impresses me most about McCoy is his knowledge of the game. Just hearing him talk and speak in the locker room after the practice was over, his knowledge of what's expected of him at the center position. I mean, he's got it down. You know, he's got a game plan. I would not shock me if that kid starts day one. Now, that said, there's always, you know, they might go ahead and go with Nick Easton, the guy that they signed in free agency from the Vikings. It wouldn't shock me if they started Easton maybe, you know, the first few games. And then work McCoy into the lineup, you know, slowly. But I'm telling you, he's that good. But by far and away, the most impressive player. Yeah, and again, as you alluded to, it's rookie camp. So, you know, you don't want to get too hyped up or too excited. And maybe I'll actually backtrack a little bit from comparing Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, the safety from Florida, who they got in the fourth round with the 105th overall pick. I mean, I don't know what else to tell you about this kid other than he is phenomenal. He is a playmaker. I mean, this guy, his ball skills in that secondary, especially playing either the slot corner. I mean, Aaron Glenn had him lined up everywhere. They put him at right cornerback. They put him at left cornerback. They put him in the slot. They put him at the free safety. They moved him up into the box as a strong safety. I mean, they were literally moving him all over the, you know, the defensive backfield like a chess piece, basically. And, you know, Aaron Glenn even mentioned after practice was over, he pointed out that was our intention. And our goal was to get this guy on the field and let him, you know, let him make as many impact plays as he can immediately. I think he's the best safety on the team already. I know that.
Time out. I want to pause here because I know you had mentioned in the article for Big Easy Magazine where you said that Saints fans, why they should be second lining and twirling an umbrella down in the French Quarter,
yes,
celebrating the steal of the entire draft with the fourth round pick, sucking the young man out of Florida. But you're saying that this young man right now is better than the safeties they already have on the roster, guys like Von Bell and the Williams kids.
I think he's just based on the eyeball test alone, he's as talented, if not more talented, than Von Bell. And I also believe he'd had a slight advantage over Marcus Williams head-to-head, too. Now, I mean, we're just comparing them head-to-head, you know, talent for talent, whatever. I just think Gardner is that good. I really do. And now look, again, it's rookie camp. You know, I don't want to overblow it. And, again, I had to walk back my compat. I got a little excited maybe and threw out names like Ronnie Lott, Ed Reed, Troy Polamalu. So I'll walk that back a minute, obviously, because we hadn't even seen a kid play a single snap. But I'm just
Barry, you can just blame that excitement on being down there, and maybe you made it down to Pato's. Maybe you had a little too many hurricanes. you just got a little out of control, brother. It's okay. It happens, man. It's okay. You're still a professional.
Yeah. Look, bottom line on this kid, he's very talented. It would not shock me, you know. You know, Ronnie Lott, Ed Reed, okay, maybe that's a stretch. You know, the kid is talented, undeniably talented. He's a ball hawk. I mean, I even hesitate to mention the name Darren Sharper because we know the various reasons why. But he almost kind of reminds me a little bit of Darren Sharper in the sense that Darren Sharper was always – Johnny on the spot, so to speak, and always had that knack for making a big play. That's what stands out about this kid. He just has that knack. I mean, he was all over the place. He was tipping passes. He intercepted one ball. He tipped a pass intended for Alize Mack in coverage that allowed Saquon Hampton, the other safety they drafted, who also looked good, by the way, allowed him to make an interception. So, I mean, he was just all over the place. And he's just a phenomenal athlete. I honestly think he will be your starting safety. Maybe not this season, but by next season, would not shock me if he's the starting strong safety. Look, the best part about that is if you re-sign Von Bell and Marcus Williams, then you're talking about having one of the best, one of the best and deepest safety positions league wide. I mean, think about. I can't even really think of another NFL team that would have that many good safeties on one defense. I mean, he's just that good. So,
We're talking with Barry Herstis. He covers the New Orleans Saints for the Big Easy Magazine as well as the Saints News Network right here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Barry, let's go away from the guys that were drafted and let's talk about some of the guys that were undrafted rookie free agents that they signed. I know you and I have talked in the past about the big mammoth man, just Andre the Giant Spawn, the kid from BYU, who is the wingspan of an entire football field. Who were some guys, maybe it was him, maybe it was not, who were some of the undrafted rookie free agents that stood out to you over the weekend?
Little Jordan Humphrey, the wide receiver out of Texas, who's, ironically not little at all, just his name, but he made a fantastic catch. I mean, he was blanketed, well covered, and went up for the ball and just made a phenomenal catch. Probably the highlight play of practice, maybe other than Gardner running around everywhere. Look, I think that if the Saints are going to keep, we know they're going to probably go with five receivers. There's always the possibility that they could keep a sixth one. All I'm going to tell you is that final roster spot for that last wide receiver position, I'm going to surmise will probably come down to Keith Kirkwood, the kid that they kept last year.
Out of Temple.
And Humphrey. I think it's going to be out of those two for that last wide receiver position, and it's going to be open season come starting this coming Tuesday. Starting this Tuesday, when they start OTAs, the battle for that final wide receiver spot is gonna officially start.
Let's talk about the wide receiver spot there, Barry, because you had an article that you wrote and that posted earlier this week about Cam Meredith. That's the young wide receiver that they traded for or signed, rather. He was a restricted free agent coming from the Chicago Bears. Got injured, never really made an impact last year. Terrific read there for the Saints News Network. You reported on that Meredith is out to prove that he's not, in fact, a bust. How important is OTAs and training camp for that young man?
Oh, critical. I mean, the Saints are rumored to be considering cutting him before the season starts. That's why he wound up taking that pay cut. Now he's getting, I believe it's about half the money that he was originally due to get. So he had to take a pay cut just to remain with the team. But to me, it's critical. I mean, he's got to go out and prove himself. I mean, I don't want to say they rushed him onto the field too soon, but he obviously wasn't fully healed. So there was a misdiagnosis in there somewhere, obviously. I'm not trying to specifically place blame on anybody or the medical staff or whatever. We've gone through all this countless stories about the Saints medical staff and how to relate to the Pelicans and all that stuff. But
just blame Dell Demps. That's what I would do. That's what I would do, Barry.
Yeah, but bottom line is it's critical for Cam Meredith because if he doesn't go out and prove to them that he is fully healed and he is capable of producing, basically what they signed him for, which is to be a big, a 6'3" slot receiver, because typically your slot receivers are your smaller, quicker guys. But in Meredith's case, he got the speed, but he's just a lot bigger. But that said, they're not going to just wait around forever for this guy. So if he doesn't step up here in these next weeks and months ahead and the OTAs and training camp and preseason and prove that he is the guy that they thought they were getting when they signed him to the offer sheet, I guarantee you somebody will take his spot. So, it's critical for Cam Meredith to have a big training camp in the preseason.
We're talking with Barry Herstis of the Saints News Network, as well as Big Easy Magazine here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Barry, you mentioned OTAs begin coming up on Tuesday. I want to talk a little bit about the relationship that is seemingly flourishing between the Saints and the Pels. They've always been attached to the hip, especially with Mickey Loomis being involved. But, you kind of reported on a few things that, after the Pels won the lottery the other night, you had two prominent Saints – tweet out things almost immediately. You had Sean Payton tweeting out a photo of Zion Williamson in the Saints jersey, probably as a tight end or whatever. And then you also had one of the leaders on the team, you know, Cameron Jordan, tweeting at Anthony Davis directly about if he was going to mentor the young man. What do you make of this? You know, there's always been a relationship between the two franchises. They have their training facilities right next door to one another. They're owned by the same group. But I don't know. It seems to be something different, and it seems the excitement with associated now with the Pels and Gail Benson's commitment to that team and the hiring of David Griffin has had, I don't know, this real positive impact that's over with the Saints as well about their NBA franchise that they share a city with.
Yeah, look, there's a national narrative, or I'm trying to think of the term I want to use. There's a perception out there nationally, particularly among your national media types. I don't want to really call out no names, but we know the obvious ones: Colin Cowherd, Stephen A. Smith. I'll leave it there. that basically. Are calling out the city of New Orleans and questioning its viability as a major league market. Now, there's nothing worse you can do than tell somebody from New Orleans or from Louisiana that they're below standard or they're not major league. I'm not sure why this narrative has started. It began with the NFC Championship game, with the thing with the Rams. You know, a lot of national media types rubbed the wrong way. I feel like the Saints fans or the New Orleans sports fan base in general are whiners or crybabies, you know, be that as it may. To make the insinuation or to make the assessment that somehow New Orleans because it's in the South, or that it's not as big as market as say a Los Angeles, a New York, Chicago, Dallas, Miami, whatever big city you want to throw in there, does not mean that it's not a viable market. And look, we know how passionate sports fans are in New Orleans. In southeastern Louisiana, Baton Rouge, Lafayette, the entire southeastern Louisiana region. To me, personally, and look, I got no skin in the game, so I could care less what people say, but it's just, as a New Orleans native and a Louisiana native myself, I take umbrage. I take great, I disagree wholeheartedly with a Stephen A. Smith or a Brian Windhorst, for crying out loud, trying to espouse the narrative that, so basically they're basically saying, had the Knicks or the Lakers drafted Zion or gotten the first pick, it was perfectly fine. But because little New Orleans, the fan base that's always complaining about something in their eyes, got the pick, well, they're not worthy. Maybe the kids should go back to school. Really? Really? So, again, man, that's the perception that's out there nationally. And the only way you fix that, and the Saints have been the most successful at it. Obviously, the Pelicans have a lot of work to do. But, yeah, you know, assuming Anthony Davis stays and you put him and Zion together on the same team, well, that's a pretty good lineup there. So, I personally think the Pelicans are in good shape. I hope they build around Zion. I hope they keep Anthony Davis, regardless of whatever happens with the Pelicans situation. The two franchises now are forever linked. Not just because they're owned by the same person or they from the same ownership group, but because they represent. They represent our region and our fans, and the amount of disrespect that was shown to this city and these great fans in southeastern Louisiana is shameful, absolutely shameful. And people like Stephen A. Smith and Colin Cowherd and Brian Windhorst and all those people should absolutely be ashamed of themselves.
Our boy, Barry, delivering the goods as always. I know you would, my friend. And just a recommendation, another way with, you know, besides winning and turning things around as a franchise, another way to kind of quiet those critics from the national media is, Barry, let's just go, you know, old school arm wrestling tournament, like over the top with Sly Stallone. I nominate you to be the anchor of our arm wrestling team. What do you? What say you?
Oh, well, we're in trouble then if that's the case. we might need a little backup on that one.
Barry, appreciate the time as always, brother. Enjoy your weekend, and we'll talk to you soon, my friend.
You got it, buddy.
Fired up, Barry Hurstis, joining us here on RP3 and Company. When we come back, we'll give you an update on the PGA Championship right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. I'm your host, Raymond Parts III, broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing, also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1, as well as 133 and 1133 in HD on LUS Fiber. Update from the PGA Championship there at Bethpage Black Course in upstate New York. Brooks Koepka is obviously still your leader at 7-under. He won't tee off until 12:49 p.m. But Jordan Spieth has made a move. Through three holes, he's 1-under the day. He's now tied for third at 2-under par. So the former multiple major champion making him a move here on Friday. We'll keep you posted with more PGA Championship updates throughout the show. Second hour in the books. Third hour, going to lead off with my rant of the week right here on 103.7 The Game.
Live and local, we are Acadiana's sports station. 103.7 The Game. KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parks III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. LSU All-American Skylar Green.
You know, as a young athlete growing up, you always want to do the game-winning something, the game-winning shot, game-winning catch. And I thought the biggest part for me right there, that Georgia catch, that solidifying everybody seeing that LSU for real.
Ridge and Cajun hoop star Elfrid Payton.
But it's definitely a boost when you, you know, when you look up in the stands and you see your mom, see your dad, night in and night out, it's just different. I encourage everybody to be an opportunity to play at home, to do it, deserve a feeling.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Welcome to the third and final hour of RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1, as well as 133 and 1133 in HD on LUS Fiber. We started off today's show talking about LSU baseball getting a much-needed victory over the Auburn Tigers. They've now won three in a row.
I don't care for Auburn.
Dating back to last weekend.
Auburn sucks.
You can play that underneath everything.
Auburn sucks.
Yes.
Yeah. Let's go, Eric. What we do?
I like driving in my truck.
He likes to drive in his truck.
Auburn sucks.
Auburn sucks.
I think that's something myself and diehard LSU fans can agree on.
The Squidbillies got it right.
The Squidbillies always get it right.
They do.
They always get it right.
He wears a Bama hat.
I know. LSU takes down Auburn in game one of their regular season series finale there at Alex Box Stadium last night. They've now won three in a row, dating back to the win at Arkansas last weekend. Building up some momentum, Eric Walker looked very good last night on the mound for the Tigers. Todd Peterson came in, looked good once again. Second straight outing that he's appeared that he's looked good for multiple innings. So maybe Todd Peterson, a high-energy guy, is returning to form for LSU. And Walker, has he turned a corner now? Is he starting to kind of return to form? It'd be perfect timing if that was the case. But LSU will get back to action tonight right here, and you can listen to it live on 103.7 The Game. Pregame at 6:30, first pitch at 7 for game 2 of that series. We also touched on the Raging Cajun baseball team dropping their series opening game to the ULM Warhawks on the road. That snapped a 25-game winning streak for UL versus ULM in baseball. The Cajuns still need to win one of their last two games to lock up a spot in the Sun Belt Conference tournament over in Conway, Arkansas. So a little bit pressure-packed situation for a team right now with only two games remaining. They'll get back to work tonight as well. We've also been touching on PGA Championship that's currently going on as we speak. And we've had a slew of terrific guests, including Eric Narcisse, giving us a recap of high school baseball state championships, Barry Hurstis from the Saints News Network, and, of course, Jerry Glasgow, who made time for us, the UL head softball coach. His team kicks off the Oxford Regional today, later this afternoon, around 3:30 p.m., and they'll be looking to win that regional, moving on to the Supers for the first time in more than a few years. But with all that said, it's the third and final hour of today's show. It's time for my rant of the week.
Let me tell you something. You know what really grinds my gears?
Uh-oh. RP3 is ready to sound off.
Serenity now! Serenity now! Serenity now! Serenity now! Serenity now! Serenity now!
This is more than a complaint, but less than a tirade. This is Ray's Rant of the Week.
Everyone loves, and I tell you loves, to hate on New Orleans. They just do. Now, they love coming here. They love having a good time. But whenever they have an opportunity to throw shade at the Crescent City, to throw shade at the state of Louisiana, to throw shade at our sports franchises here in the state and in the city of New Orleans, whew, they can't help themselves. They get right to it. Don't hold back. We saw it again this week with the New Orleans Pelicans being rewarded the top overall pick in this summer's NBA draft. They won the lottery. They beat the odds. They only had a 6% chance to do so, and yet they did. And almost immediately, the instinct by national media members, the talking heads, the moron parade that exists at the four-letter network couldn't help themselves. Don't be surprised if you see Zion Williamson go back to Duke. New Orleans hasn't locked it up just yet. Those are the words that are coming out of people's mouths. Those are the words, those are the letters being formed into words for articles. And people are doing it with a straight face. Because God forbid that the Big Easy, God forbid that New Orleans got themselves a generational player again. That's what it all boils down to. It's jealousy and envy. They're going to sit there and talk about how it's the least valuable franchise, according to Forbes, in the NBA. True. It's very true. They're going to talk about how it's one of the smallest media markets in the entire NBA. Very true. Absolutely. 110% correct. But it does not matter. The world does not exist around New York City and Los Angeles. I hate to tell everyone, or better yet, the world does not revolve around the thoughts, opinions, and standpoints of people in Bristol, Connecticut. The Pels have every right, just as much as the New York Knicks, just as much as the Los Angeles Lakers, to get a generational talent like Zion Williamson. And I know the narrative has been, well, look what they did with Anthony Davis. They wasted Anthony Davis. First of all, the city of New Orleans and the fans didn't waste Anthony Davis. A bad general manager wasted a generational talent like Anthony Davis, and he's on his rear behind now because of that. Dale Demps is no longer in charge. And Gail Benson, the woman who Saints players refer to as queen, is now fully invested in turning things around with the New Orleans Pelicans based on the fallout from the Anthony Davis trade request that derailed not only the Pelicans season but also the Los Angeles Lakers season and caused the city and the franchise to have a black eye. Dale Demps, you're gone. Bye. Bye, Felicia. Have a nice day. Anthony Davis will be gone as well. She's committed to running this organization as a basketball franchise and not as an afterthought anymore. And some blame has to be put at the feet of the Benson family because of that. Because, yes, they stepped up when George Shen wanted to sell the franchise and didn't have it in a good spot, and the NBA actually owned it temporarily. That was during the Chris Paul trade fiasco. So they bought it to ensure that the city had a franchise. That's great. But they weren't as invested with the Pels as they had been with the Saints. That is a legit knock and criticism on that. But that has changed now. That has changed because she's hired David Griffin, a man who's won a world championship with the Cleveland Cavaliers. Fired Dale Demps, brought in Griff to run the front office as director of vice president of basketball operations for the Pels. And now they have the number one overall pick. He's going to make smart free agent signings. He's going to make some trades. And he's going to take Anthony Davis and he's going to use him and he's going to get whatever he can. And he will get the maximum amount for AD. The Brow is going to be a coveted guy and teams are going to have to back up the Brinks truck, so to speak, to get him from the Pels. And it will help the Pels and help whatever organization Anthony Davis goes to. Things are turning around. We have Griff in place for the Pels. And now they're going to take Zion Williamson. But the national media can't help themselves. They did the same thing with the New Orleans Saints after the NFC Championship game, where the Saints get robbed of a win in the NFC Championship game, and I will be one to fully admit that they shouldn't have allowed the game to get into the situation that it got into where the refs were able to decide the game. They should have handled business and whooped up on the Rams and sent their butts packing back to Los Angeles with the loss before that even occurred. So some of that falls on the Saints. But they did get robbed, and they got jobbed by the officials. And when they complained about it, and when they got salty about it, the national media pushed back and were like, you shouldn't be complaining, you're too much of a whiny baby, blah, 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 blah. Almost immediately. Now, if that was Los Angeles, if the job had happened, the robbery had happened against the Rams, oh, hell, man, we'd still be hearing about it right now in May. If that was the New York Giants that happened to, oh, my God. Oh, it would have been, you wouldn't, there'd be a 30 for 30 produced already by now and being released this weekend. And don't even bring up if it would have happened to the New England Patriots, because we know how much the folks in Bristol love them some Pats. But they did it then. They wanted to put down the city. They wanted to put down the franchise. They wanted to tell New Orleans people how to act. Now, mind you, these are also the same cats, Screamin' A. Smith and Cowherd and others, that will bash New Orleans, bash the franchises left and right, whether it's the Pels or the Saints, and they've done a lot of that lately because it gets them a lot of clicks, because they know that the folks down in Louisiana get fired up about these kind of things and they're going to come out taking their gloves off wanting to fight in the parking lot. That's why they do that. But here's the other thing. Those cats are also the first ones to put in their media credential request when the Final Four is in New Orleans, when the Super Bowl is in New Orleans, when the national championship game is held inside the Superdome in New Orleans. Because they love to come to New Orleans to have a good time, to eat the food, to drink the hurricanes, to drink the hand grenades. They love coming to New Orleans and having a good time and treating the city like it's their own toilet. But then when they leave the city, they are quick to bash the city they like to have a good time in and bash the franchises and the fan base and the leadership. You had people putting out a narrative this week as if the Pels had not rededicated themselves to the organization, that Gail Benson hadn't been committed to change things with the organization, as if David Griffin had not been hired like Dale Demps was still running the show. God forbid you allow factual evidence to interfere with your talking point for the four-letter network or whatever other network you're on. It's lazy, bruh. It's just lazy. It's lazy, and they get away with it because they can, and they get paid to get away with it. So you know what? The next time the Super Bowl comes back to New Orleans, the next time the Final Four is here in New Orleans, y'all just keep y'all's asses at home. We don't want you to come in our state. We don't want you to come to New Orleans. Just stay at home. There's other people that are more than welcome to come. Y'all just stay away. You ain't welcomed. Don't come here. Now that I'm all fired up on a Friday.
I like when the rant ends with as a matter of fact. I like sometimes the rant just kind of, I don't want to say fizzles out, but sometimes it's more of a slow decline to the end of the, but like today, and then there was a few days ago with the, or then the Raging Cajun's attendance one you did was another going that end, just very matter of fact. Now it's over.
Now it's done. And I got to get my happy on. I got a pre-K award ceremony to go to after the show.
Yep.
I can't be bringing the negative energy.
No, sir.
Into the pre-K for my daughter today.
I will be FaceTimed the kindergarten graduation. So
big up.
Make it happen.
Make it happen. Coming up next here on RP3 and Company, we're going to keep things going. Cody Schutz, always going to deliver the goods for you. RPOs with RP3 next, right here on 103.7 The Game.
Blue poncho.
Shotgun formation. Cody snaps the questions.
Dre.
And RP3 makes the reads. This is RPOs with RP3.
Blue poncho.
Welcome back to RP3 and Company Live here from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Time for this week's edition of RPOs with RP3. Are you ready, Raymond?
Oh, I'm ready to get my happy on.
You've been ready, huh, bro?
Woo!
Been ready. Let's jump right in. I want to talk some LSU baseball at the top of RPOs today. We know that number is 18, that win total in conference play in the regular season. That's what LSU was trying to get to in order to host a regional. If LSU comes out tonight and they win, let's say against Auburn, they get a nice win, that means they'll be at 17, one away from that magic number. And if they get to 18, that basically guarantees them a host spot. So let's work under the hypothetical situation that LSU wins the game tonight against Auburn and will have a chance to sweep come Saturday. If that is the case, RPO for me on Maneri going with Zach Hess as the game 3 starter.
I pass.
Even if they get a nice another 7-1 win tonight, they don't need. He's not going to start him on to try to get the sweep.
No, because I think they'll probably try to throw out Mikhail Hilliard, because I don't think Mikhail Hilliard's going to be used. But if they already have the series locked up, this will be the last opportunity to have Hilliard have a chance, because I don't think you're going to see him in the SEC tournament. I really don't.
Not unless you have to, I guess.
Because Cole Henry's supposed to be back. So you're going to have Walker, Henry, Marceau, then maybe. No, I think I don't think you're going to do that with Hess. Now, okay.
I mean, you may end up needing him tonight.
Unless you don't use him tonight.
That's my thought. If you get another big win tonight where you don't need him, then if he hasn't seen the mound yet, it's got to be tempting.
Pitching by committee, maybe. Have Zach come in, do 2 innings. Fondo do 2 innings. That kind of situation where they kind of
start Zach piecemeal it. And then just go from there. If he's given up 2 hits and no runs in 2 innings, I might have to stick with him. I don't know. That's why I'm asking you.
Oh, you know, my instinct, my gut says pass, but now my head says option. I'm going to change my mind. I'm going to say option.
Depends on if he gets in tonight.
It depends on what occurs tonight. If Zach doesn't have to pitch at all tonight again, then maybe so you do give him the start. But I do feel like Maneri and Dunn want to try to get Hilliard to get some of his confidence back if they have the opportunity, because they're more than likely going to need him if they're going to make a run in the SEC tournament and in a regional.
It's going to be interesting to see. It's a weird situation for Maneri to be in. First, though, they got to win tonight. We'll see how that works out. Let's talk some NBA hoops now. Raymond, they're in the playoffs. The Western Conference Finals are happening, and Golden State has taken a 2-0 lead. Surprise, surprise. The Warriors won last night, 114-111. I believe you told me they had a quite incredible comeback in the second half, did Golden State, to get the win. And they did it without Kevin Durant. So I need to ask you, RPO, on the Warriors not needing Kevin Durant to get back to the NBA Finals.
They were down by 15 at halftime last night, and they came back and won that game. I don't think they need KD to beat the Portland Trailblazers. It's not a knock on the Trailblazers. Right. I love watching them play. Dame is a great player. He's an underrated player, and so is McCollum. But they just don't have the horses to keep up with Golden State. You have a team down by 15 at halftime on the road, and you let them off the hook. Now, Portland will get a boost. They'll get some energy when they go back home. That crowd is great up there in the Pacific Northwest.
Keep Portland weird.
Yep, keep Portland weird. But they may take a game, but don't be surprised if this series wraps up in five games and you never see Kevin Durant.
A gentleman sweep without Kevin Durant, yeah. Unfortunate there. As we said earlier in the week, we don't really expect the Trailblazers.
So I run with
right.
that then.
But we don't expect the Trailblazers to be the team to dethrone the Golden State Warriors.
No.
Check this out, man. There's a very busy weekend coming up, RP3. Your daughter is finishing school. Kaysen is also my stepson finishing school. He's finishing kindergarten today. LSU baseball, UL baseball. There's softball regionals abound. They're in Oxford. They're in Baton Rouge. There's some golf happening this weekend.
Correct.
NBA playoffs are also going on. I believe the Preakness. There's some horse racing happening.
That's right. That's right.
Money in the Bank is also this weekend. WWE fans, shout out to that. My sister-in-law is even having a baby shower this weekend. There's a ton of stuff happening before we reconvene. But, Raymond, tonight, tonight, I will be in the crowd watching Detective Pikachu with Kaysen. I am so excited. Cannot wait. 7 p.m. start time for the movie. Yours truly will be in the crowd with his wife and his kid. RPO on Detective Pikachu being the best part of my weekend.
The best part.
There's a right and wrong answer to this.
Yeah.
Just in case you were wondering.
As much as I know that you love the Pokemon, the Japanese card game turned into a anime series, turned into a movie franchise.
You're close on the timeline. I'll let you have it. You're not. It's a video game first, but you're close.
Okay, my bad.
You're close. It's good.
I'm going to say run.
It has to be.
For Cody.
You want to know why? I'll even give you reasons why.
All right, give it to me.
Because there will be other school graduations. There will be other LSU and UL baseball games. There will be other softball regionals, players.
There will be other school graduations.
There will be other baby showers, other Money in the Bank pay-per-views, more horse racing to come. But I will only once get to see a live-action Pokemon film for the first time. And that is why it will be the best part of my weekend.
I hope it's beautiful.
Oh, it will be. Don't worry. I will make sure it will be. A bonus RPO, because I like to throw these at you.
I do love these.
RPO, does Bray Wyatt show up at Money in the Bank?
Run.
He's going to come already. We're doing it now. Paying it off early.
You unveiled the new mask designed by the guy who designed Slipknot's mask.
Right.
And created by Tom Savini, famous horror movie prop guy. Yeah, if you did that last week after a month, Money in the Bank.
Time for him to show up.
It's time for him, and more than likely win.
Well, he can't win, but he can, because he's not, in order to win, you have to be in the match. Maybe he could win. It's WWE. Anything can happen. You're right.
Yeah.
He could jump somebody backstage and be in the match just like that.
Oh, he's making an appearance, for sure.
That's my thing. I want to see him. I want to see this character actually professionally wrestle someone, because how are you going to, I don't know, how are you going to make that work? I'm super excited. This weekend is going to be great.
As the kids would say these days, it's going to be lit.
This place is getting lit.
There it is.
I got my icy on. I know you got your icy on.
You got your icy on, Ray?
I got my icy on.
Let's let Rick Ross take us to break. What do you say?
Uncle Lester.
You gotta love him.
We love him.
That was RPOs, man.
That's right. RPOs with RP3 in the book. When we come back here after the break, we'll talk with Tyler Nunez, Tiger Rag, right here on 103.7 The Game.
Yeah. Pizzle. Woo! Let's go, Eric. I like driving in my truck.
He likes to drive in his truck.
Auburn sucks.
Auburn sucks.
I like driving in my truck.
He likes to drive in his truck.
Auburn sucks.
Auburn sucks.
Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW channel 32.1, as well as 133 and 1133 in HD on LUS Fiber. We start off the day talking a little LSU baseball. They got the much-needed win over Auburn, as the Squidbillies sit there and told us their feelings about.
I don't care for Auburn.
I don't care for Auburn.
I don't care for Auburn.
They get a pretty convincing win. Eric Walker was very good out on the bump. So was Todd Peterson, Mr. Energy himself. They get the win in the opening game. They need to take two of three. They really should sweep Auburn. Auburn's not that great of a team. So LSU gets back on the right foot. You can listen to them live again tonight, game two of the regular season finale series at Alex Box Stadium. Bumper to Bumper Sports will be live from Rufino's on the river. The good brother Ben Love will be in the house. He'll take you from 4 to 6:30. 6:30 will be LSU pregame. First pitch will then be at 7 o'clock. And then the regular season finale, game three of this series against Auburn, will be on Saturday, once again live right here on 103.7 The Game, starting at 1:30 to 5 o'clock. And once the ball game is done, we will switch over to live pre-race coverage of the Preakness Stakes. That'll be from roughly about 5 to 6:30, the second leg of the Triple Crown. As we know, the horse that won the Kentucky Derby then was disqualified, and neither the horse that won the Kentucky Derby at first nor the horse that won the Derby after officials ruled the first one had done something that violated the rules, neither one of those horses will be in the field for the Preakness. But it still should be a very exciting race, and you can listen to it live right here on 103.7 The Game on Saturday. And then we'll wrap up the weekend. You can catch Astros versus Red Sox tonight as well as Saturday on our sister station KVOL, 97.7 FM, 1330 AM Lafayette. Astros versus Red Sox, it'll be going on our sister station. But on Sunday, we'll close out the weekend strong. Strohs will be right here on 103.7 The Game, 11:30 a.m. pregame start for Game 3 of that series with the Boston Red Sox. That being said, Tyler Nunez.
He's MIA.
We're taking a rain check with Tyler Nunez, our friend.
MIA currently missing in action. I'm not sure what else to tell you.
Missing in action? That's fine. That's why I get paid what I get paid. I get paid to talk on the radio, Cody.
You do get paid to talk on the radio.
So if a guest lets us down, that's okay.
I mean, he's not.
Move it forward.
He's not letting us down. I'm sure he has his reasons.
Maybe he's evading authorities once again, as he was a couple weeks ago when helicopters were all around him while he was on.
What upsets me the most is that I had a great wrestling theme lined up to play for him. Was unable to play that.
Just play it right now. Play it right now for me.
Do I still have it? Oh no. Well, you're gonna have to give me just 1 second here. I'm gonna do this.
You know, just cue up the wrestling thing for me.
I will. Look at this. Watch. Here you go. You want this? This is what you want?
Give it to me.
You want it?
Cody?
Yeah?
You do a glorious job, my friend.
Oh, you do a glorious job as well.
Thank you.
Yes, this is the guy. You would be a big fan of Bobby Roode. He's no longer known as Bobby Roode. He is now known as Robert Roode because Bobby is a child's name. He is basically the, you know, Elias is the kind of remolding of Honky Tonk Man in a way. You know what I mean? He's obviously not.
But in a bad way.
I mean, nobody's ever going to be the original. It's very hard to get over on the original. But Honky Tonk Man was this.
WWE Hall of Famer, Honky Tonk Man.
Absolutely. Friend of the station,
Honky Tonk Man. Yes.
But Elias does this similar gimmick. He plays a guitar. He's always singing. You know, he's a heel. He very rarely actually wrestles a match. He finds ways to get out of things. Robert Roode is now the new Ravishing Rick Roode. But Roode for Robert is spelled R-O-O-D-E. Instead of R-U-D-E. Mm-hmm. And he has the mustache.
Oh, he has the mustache?
That goes down. He didn't always. He had a beard. But then when he re-debuted as Robert Roode instead of Bobby, he now has the Ravishing Rick Roode mustache that comes down the side of the mouth there. He's got the abs. He's not doing the whole posing and everything yet. You know, Rick Rude used to do the whole, you know, check me out.
And he used to have the spandex pants that had the ladies on them.
Right, right. So we haven't gone like full Rick Rude yet with Robert.
Rest in peace, by the way.
But, yeah. But, you know, he's there. And something else, well, you just, with the, it blew my mind. I don't know. You watched wrestling during the Attitude Era?
A little bit, yes.
A little bit. Does the name Ashley Massaro mean anything to you?
Yes, she passed away.
Yeah, isn't that crazy, man? 39 years old. Dude, I haven't seen, like, any other stories about, like, maybe what happened or whatever.
It's going to take a few days.
But the one thing that gave me chills that I saw was her last tweet before everyone found out that she passed away. It was the day prior, and it was a picture of a big stack of fan mail that she was like, I just answered all this fan mail going, send it out. You should see it soon. And, like, now those people are going to be getting, you know, fan mail from someone who's no longer alive. I don't know. It's just crazy. 39 years old. That's way, way, way too young.
But that's very common.
But why?
For the wrestling profession. Well, it used to be for the guys that came up through the 80s, and right, particularly through the cartoon era, the golden era of wrestling, is that a lot of them admittedly later said, you know, steroid use and
cocaine,
and
call it what it is.
And you know, heroin and things like that. They just took a toll on their hearts.
Right.
And they just stopped.
I mean,
right?
I'm so happy that One Man Gang can still be making these appearances around indie shows in Louisiana, because it's cool to see him. He is a staple of that era of WWF. But when you look at him today, man, it's a harsh reality when you see, you know.
Or Beyond the Mat documentary that had Jake the Snake in it from, I guess that's about 15 years ago.
Thank God for DDP. Thank God for DDP. How many wrestlers has DDP, Diamond Dallas Page, bang, how many wrestlers' lives has he saved just by realizing, I myself, as Diamond Dallas Page, I don't want to die?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because he was there. He was, I mean, on the on his deathbed, essentially, and brought himself back and then decided to create a program. And it's called yoga. It's a little more intense than what we would consider regular yoga. But, I mean, he has saved countless wrestlers, and probably a lot of wrestlers that we wouldn't even know ever had issues or coming back from that without having to go through a terrible, terrible downfall because of DDP. So shout out to him for that as well.
Yes, he's made an impact in a lot of lives, a lot of wrestlers. And, you know, he also has that program. It's also developed to a certain point. It's also developed to a certain point that his program is also helping people that are non-wrestling folks. So his approach and everything that goes, whether it's with the yoga or just the treatment that they do, has helped immensely in the world of wrestling, but also now outside of the world of wrestling. So big up to DDP. We're a big fan of him. Even though he never made it to the WWE, right? He never...
He was part of the invasion angle.
Yeah, he was part of the invasion angle.
One of the few guys that I think defected over or whatever. He was with Booker T. He's one of the few guys that came out the other side of the invasion angle looking all right. Nobody really came out looking good besides Booker T, but he came out looking all right. Look, my little man, look. I'm on the FaceTime right now, Rain. Look, he's getting his little thing diploma right now. Look, he's going to sit down. Good job, Kason. Yes. Proud of you, buddy. Well done, little man. Well done.
Reminder that we got you covered, obviously, for this weekend, LSU baseball. Once again today, Ben Love, the good brother himself, will be at Ruffino's on the River once again. So you got to make sure to check him out. Listen right here to 103.7 The Game. We'll have the Jordy Holberg Show from 2 to 4. Then the good brother Ben Love will take over from 4 o'clock. He's going to lead you into LSU pregame at 6:30. Tonight's game doesn't start till 7. Game 2 of the series with Auburn doesn't start till 7. Pre-game will be at 6:30, first pitch at 7 o'clock, so make sure to keep it live and local right here with us on 103.7 The Game. If you want to listen to the Astros tonight, just switch over to KVOL, our sister station. That's the Rewind, 97.7 FM and 1330 AM. And then this weekend, you'll have Under the Dome with the world-famous CD. You'll have LSU baseball on Saturday, and that'll lead to the Preakness, which you can listen to live right here on 103.7 The Game. Coming up, just a reminder, coming up, we'll have an interview. Was able to catch up with UFC champ Dustin the Diamond Poirier.
What a cool cat.
The king of Lafayette stopped by the studios. We're able to catch up, have an interview there for you guys to check out about possibly when he's going to be fighting again. Ooh, and who it could be possibly against. Yeah, some good stuff. He got the key to the city the other day from the mayor, so make sure to stay tuned for that as well. In Louisiana, there are thousands of miles of utility lines and gas pipelines buried just beneath the surface. Sometimes multiple lines are in one area. So if you or a contractor that you've hired is digging a hole to put in a new fence, a pool, or for another reason, you run the risk of hitting an underground line even by digging only a few inches. What happens then? Maybe you only knock the power out for your entire neighborhood. But sometimes there's an explosion with injuries and even death. It happens every single year, and there's a very simple way to avoid it. Before you dig, call 811. Call 811 2 days before you dig. Tell the operator your address, and someone will come out and mark the location of buried lines so you or your contractor can avoid them. Simple, right? It's free of charge, and it's the law. Louisiana One Call operates 811 as a public service, and to promote public safety, Louisiana One Call and 103.7 The Game remind you, call 811 and know what's below before you dig. Coming up next, Dustin the Diamond Poirier. That's right, interview with the champ right here on RP3 and Company on 103.7 The Game.
Welcome back to RP3 and Company. I'm your host, Raymond Parsons III, here on 103.7 The Game. And it's our privilege to welcome on our next guest. He is a UFC champion. He's Lafayette's own, the king of Lafayette, the one and only Dustin the Diamond Poirier. Dustin, how's it feel to be back home here in the Lafayette area?
It's great to be back, man. I love Lafayette. I love Acadiana. And the reception has been incredible since I've been home.
A few days earlier this week, you had the mayor present you with the key to the city at City Hall, and then you had a great reception, a meet and greet with fans there at Dino's Pizza on Bertrand. More than 100 people showed up, got photos taken with you and the belt. You signed autographs. How much of a humbling experience was that, seeing how your hometown responded with you coming back and being the champion?
I've been honestly blown away by all the support and love. You know, if there's one word I can say about this whole thing, I'm just grateful and happy to be part of this community. And that is what Louisiana is right there. When everybody comes out and supports a local person trying to do things, that's what I love so much about this area. But it's just been incredible, man, the support. But we're doing big things, man. We're doing big things.
You know, we talked earlier a few weeks ago before your title bout about, you know, the decision to move back home. It was important for you. You'd done some training for a long time in Florida, but then you felt confident being able to move back home. Why was it so important for you to still be grounded and based out of Acadiana? Why is that so important to you?
It was big to me, but honestly, it was more important for me to raise my daughter here. And that's the reason why me and my wife moved back. My daughter was getting to the age where, you know, she's starting to learn a lot of things, and every week was, she was doing different things. And I knew it was time to get back home and have her around family. I didn't want to take that away from her. I didn't want to be that selfish for my career and take her childhood away. I wanted her to grow up around cousins and her grandmothers and in Acadiana. You know, we and my wife were living in Florida at the time. So I always knew I was going to retire and return to Louisiana at the end of my career, but having my daughter and really opened my eyes and made me make the change sooner.
We're talking with Dustin the Diamond Poirier here on RP3 and Company on 103.7 The Game. Dustin, you had such humble beginnings right here out of Acadiana, fighting down at the Sugar Arena in New Iberia and in local small venues and working your way up. You took the hard way, right? Nothing came easy for you. You worked every step of the way. Did you ever think in those early years that you would be here right now, UFC champion?
You know, I didn't not think I would. I just knew I had a long road ahead of me, and I always believed in myself. And I just wanted to be the best fighter I could be. And, you know, hard work pays off. It really does.
Dustin, you're now the champ, but obviously you're going to be having another, you're going to defend that title sooner than later. Where do we stand with that right now? Are you going to try to fight before the end of the year? When do you think that's going to happen?
I'm thinking it's looking like September 7th. Me and Khabib Nurmagomedov are going to unify the belts. And it'll be a big main event pay-per-view spot and a very high-level fight.
What is your preparation now? You know, walk me through the process. You get done having a fight. How much time do you allow yourself, your body to recover, for you to recover, just kind of relax, kind of refocus yourself before you get into training and then the heavy training to prepare for a title fight?
You know, right now I train year round. There's no season in fighting. We don't have seasons. So I just kind of stay in shape as best I can. It's hard to do that with all the boudin around Lafayette, Louisiana. But, you know, I stay in shape and keep working on my craft, work on my skill set of jiu-jitsu and boxing. I just slowly have fun here in Louisiana. And when it's time to lock down and do training camp, I go to South Florida. And I usually do 8 to 10 weeks. But I'm already healed from the bumps and bruises from this last fight. Honestly, didn't take a whole lot of damage in that one. So my body feels good. I think at the end of June, probably, we'll head back to South Florida and start preparing for this fight.
Talk a little about your foundation. I know you're very passionate. You and your wife both are. And that's one of the reasons why, in addition of bringing pride to Acadiana by being a UFC champion, the mayor earlier this week gave you the key to the city is the work that you've been doing with your foundation. Tell the folks about the foundation and what they can do to help out if they want to somehow contribute their time or their money to your cause.
Me and my wife started the Good Fight Foundation a little bit over a year ago. Before that, we were selling my fight-worn stuff for charitable causes around Acadiana, and then we just decided to give it its own identity, and we started a nonprofit, the Good Fight Foundation. And you can check out any goals or any updates that we have going on at thegoodfightgroup.com. But it's just something me and my wife started to give back to Acadiana, and we don't have one set goal or one set thing that we put this money or put this labor or causes towards. It's whatever's going on at the time. I usually use my fights as a platform to spread the word of what's going on. Right now we're building a playground for Prairie Elementary for disabled children. It'll be done and ready to go before next school year, so I'm just excited about that. But you know, when my next fight's announced, we'll announce another goal, and the fights keep getting bigger, so the goals keep getting bigger. I just want to help out as many people as we can. And huge thank you to my wife, because it wouldn't be possible to run this thing and get everything done without her. She does a great job.
Dustin, we'll wrap it up with this. Obviously, your focus, you're now the champ. You're going to have the unification bout, hopefully, by the end of the year, as you indicated, in September. But, you know, you have moved back home to Acadiana. You've been kind of an inspiration to a lot of younger fighters, and I know you've reached out to them, and anyone that needs help, you usually give it to them or give them some insight. So have you already started thinking about what you could be doing once your time inside the octagon is done? Maybe training younger fighters, maybe, you know, doing something like that, opening up an academy, anything like that? Or have you allowed yourself to think about that, or maybe not, since you're still in the fight game?
Yeah, I kind of like what you said at the end there. I haven't really thought a whole lot about it yet, because I'm still so, you know, so into fighting and defending this belt and unifying this belt and just being trying to leave a legacy in fighting. I always thought that if I started thinking about plan A, it would take away from plan. I'm sorry, if I started thinking about plan B, it would take away from plan A. And I'm just focused on that. But I'll probably have 4 or 5 years left of fighting in me. And we'll see what happens after that. But I want to start some businesses. I want to help out as many people as I can. Maybe a gym. I don't know. I just want it to happen naturally. I don't want to force anything. So we'll see what happens.
Well, Dustin, congratulations once again on bringing the belt home back to Lafayette. You told me on the air that that's what was going to happen, that people could come out to the airport and check that out. So congrats on winning the belt, man, and best of luck to you in the future inside the octagon and what you and your wife do with the foundation. Thank you so much.
Thank you, man. An honor.
Thanks to Dustin, the Diamond Poirier UFC champion, making time for us here on RP3 and Company. It was great catching up with the champ this week. I want to thank all of our guests that came on today's show. Make sure to tune in on Monday. We'll have another jam-packed edition of RP3 and Company. We'll see if the Raging Cajun softball team can come out of the Oxford Regional with a victory. We'll see if LSU baseball can win the final regular season series of the year against Auburn, plus much, much more. Y'all have a great and safe weekend, and we'll talk to you all on Monday.